complete lie. They were related. God doesn't like this, and so God starts to put pressure on Pharaoh, because Pharaoh is quite smitten with Sarai, and Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household. They figure out what's going on and kick him out. Get out of here with your wife. Go somewhere else. So Abram then goes back to the land of Canaan. And you see in chapter 13, it says, so Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. All right, so at this point, everywhere Abram goes, he is constructing an altar to God. This was something that the ancients would do. When they moved into a land, they felt God's blessing upon them. They would make an altar and praise his name. So Abram is doing that. He's going from place to place and making altars in different places. And you can see in chapter 13, verse 3, from the Negev, he went up from place to place until he came to Bethel. Bethel actually means house of God. To the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. So you see, this was his way. He was calling on God. He was following God. He messed up here and there. But his life, the trajectory of his life, was obedience and praise to the Lord. And then we see that Abram grew to be very wealthy. We find in chapter 3 here that verse 2, Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. And it turns out Lot was being blessed as well. And so we see in verse 5 of chapter 13, now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents, but the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. Now you can imagine that the land was pretty large. There were some others living in the land, Canaanites and Perizzites, we find out later. But the land wasn't enough to support Abram and Lot and the Canaanites and the Perizzites. So we find in chapter 13 that there's a quarreling between Abram's herdsmen and Lot's herdsmen. And Abram comes to Lot in verse 8 of chapter 13. So Abram said to Lot, let's not have any quarreling between you and me, between your herdsmen and mine, for we're brothers. He's actually Lot's uncle, but you get the idea. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. So Abram's saying, look, God is blessing us both. Take your pick, and I'll go the other way. Okay, wherever you want. So it says in verse 10, Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt toward Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out to the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now, Lot made a decision that looked really good. Nice, as we say, juicy land. You know, it's good, well watered. But he goes into sin living in this land. And so we'll find out about that another time. But now, in chapter 14, we find that this land was so nice and appealing that a foreign king had decided it should be his land. And so we find in chapter 14, and I'm going to read all of chapter 14 and then kind of summarize it. At this time, Amrephel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Kedor Laamor, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goyim, went to war against Bera, king of Sodom, Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela. All these latter kings joined forces in the valley of Siddim, the Salt Sea. For 12 years they had been subject to Kedor Laamor. I can't say that guy's name. But in the 13th year they rebelled. In the 14th year, Kedor Laamor and the kings allied with him went out and defeated the Rephaites in Ashtaroth, Carnaim, the Zuzites in Ham, the Emites in Shaveh, Kiriathaim, and the Horites in the hill country of Seir, as far as El Paran near the desert. Then they turned back and went to En-Mishpat, that is Kadesh, and they conquered the whole territory of the Amalekites, as well as the Amorites who were living in Hazazon Tamar. Now, I like that. That'd be a cool place to live. Then the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Admah, the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar, marched out and drew up their battle lines in the valley of Siddim against Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of Goyim, Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Alisar, four kings against five. Now the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits. And when the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, some of the men fell into them, and the rest fled to the hills. The four kings seized all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their food, and they went away. They also carried off Abram's nephew Lot and his possessions, since he was living in Sodom. One who had escaped came and reported this to Abram the Hebrew. Now Abram was living near the great trees of Mamre the Amorite, a brother of Eshol and Anir, all of whom were allied with Abram. When Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he called out the 318 trained men born in his household and went in pursuit as far as Dan. During the night, Abram divided his men to attack them, and he routed them, pursuing them as far as Hobath, north of Damascus. He recovered all the goods and brought back his relative Lot and his possessions, together with the women and the other people. After Abram returned from defeating Kedorlaomer and the kings allied with him, the king of Sodom came out to meet him in the valley of Shaveh, that is the king's valley. Then Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram, saying, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand." Then Abram gave him a tenth of everything. The king of Sodom said to Abram, "Give me the people and keep the goods for yourself." But Abram said to the king of Sodom, "I have raised my hand to the Lord, God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and have taken an oath that I will accept nothing belonging to you, not even a thread or the thong of a sandal, so that you will never be able to say, 'I made Abram rich.' I will accept nothing but what my men have eaten and the share that belongs to the men who went with me, to Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre. Let them have their share." Okay, so what's going on here? It's a confusing passage because you got all these crazy names and crazy areas. And honestly, if you try to find a Bible map that has all this stuff in it, it doesn't even exist. I tried doing that to prepare for tonight. I couldn't find a Bible map that had all this listed. It would just have the time of the patriarchs and give a bunch of different stuff, but not specifically all of this. They'd show where they think Sodom and Gomorrah are. They'd show where they thought Elam might be. But a lot of these places have no idea. This is ancient history. This is, let's see, 4,500 years ago? Okay.
At least 400 years before the Exodus.
Yeah, Abram lived around 2000 B.C., is what they think, because David was around 1,000 B.C., and when you add it all up, you get about 1,000 years between Abraham and David. So, it's been a while, and we don't have real good records of all of it, but here's the basis. You've got the land by the Jordan River, the plain, which the plain is always a very well-watered area because it gets water from the river, and it's Louis could tell you all about how great you could plant stuff and it would always grow there. So going to be a very wealthy area. So you have these foreign kings like Kedorlaomer, who evidently lived in an area that in the future would be where Assyria and Babylonia would later be. Okay, now he is controlling all of this area. These five kings that live in the Jordan River area, the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Salem, which they think is Jerusalem, and they have reason because of one of the Psalms says about Salem. These kings are having to pay tribute to this foreign power. It's what happened in the past all the time. You want to go out, you want to conquer areas, and then make them pay you money. Well, they're getting tired of this, evidently. They do this for 13 years, but in the 14th year, they see an opportunity and try to take it. What's the opportunity? Well, this Kedorlaomer, king of Elam, gets three other kingdoms together and says, listen, I did such a good job at taking the Jordan area. Let's go out and conquer the rest of the south of us. Basically, let's go down until we get close to Egypt and just conquer it all. And that's what we see going on. When it says in verses 5 and 6, it talks about how he went down and they conquered this area and they took this and they took this. So what's happening is they're coming down on the east side of the Jordan River, and then they're going to come back up on the west side of the Jordan River where the Jordan Plain is, and they're just going to, you know, visit everybody and say, hey, give us your money again, and they're going to own it all. So they come down and they wipe everybody out. They take a lot of plunder, and then when they come up, the area in the Jordan, they said, we're tired of this. They rebelled. This is the 14th year, and so what happens is the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of these other three areas, Zoar and Zeboim and Adma, all get together and say, we're going to fight you. Now think about this. You've got this army that came from a long way away. They've already conquered a bunch of areas. You go out with all of your strength. You should be able to overthrow them at that point. They're worn out. They've been going along for a long time. They've been away from home who knows how long. Now's the time to overthrow your ruler. Well, it doesn't work out that way. Instead, Sodom and Gomorrah and the other guys are on the retreat, and they didn't pick a good spot to have their battle because there's tar pits all over the place, and while they're retreating, evidently their men are falling in the tar pits. So what happens? Now, instead of having to pay tribute to this king, they get plundered. And all of Sodom just gets taken away, Lot included. All right, now, what does Abraham have to do with any of this? Nothing. It's not happening near him. They're not threatening him. When he and Lot chose, he stayed, Lot went. But you know, it's an interesting thing. When he and Lot chose what looked really good. And God came to Abram immediately after and told him, in essence, don't worry about it. I've got a good plan for you, and I'm going to bless you. It's an interesting thing. I don't want to digress, but if you go back to chapter 13, God reminds him. He says, look up and around. I'm going to give this whole area to your descendants. Okay, so don't worry about what Lot chose. You're in good shape. All right, so Abraham could sit pretty, but no. As soon as he hears that Lot has been taken away, he does what we say, the right thing. He gets his whole household, and evidently the allies, people who lived in the land near him, also came to his aid. He has 318 fighting men in his home. It says they grew up in his home. So they were probably slaves or servants, and they grew up with a great deal of trust and respect for him, and they would go anywhere with him. And so he takes them, and he's going to face four kings who just defeated five kings. Picture this in your mind. Abraham, think of him as a very wealthy landowner, gets his whole crew together, and they're going to go and attack four kings who have just laid waste to five kings. Doesn't think twice about it, it looks like. Just goes. And so what happens? He beats four kings. He and his three neighbors. Now, I think of these three neighbors, you know, as wealthy landowners in the area, but they weren't kings. And they go out and they win back. So it says in chapter 14, it says, during the night, verse 15, Abram divided his men to attack them, and he routed them, pursuing them as far as Hobah, north of Damascus, which is a long ways away. We're up in Syria now. He recovered all the goods and brought back his relative Lot and all his possessions, together with the women and the other people. Now, here's where things get interesting. Abram comes back with all the stuff in tow that's been plundered. I mean, it's remarkable how you could recover everything. Recovers it all, and when he comes back, the king of Sodom comes out. Where was the king of Sodom when Abraham went and attacked? All his men fell in the tar pits, and he just went and hid, evidently. He comes out to greet Abram. He wants his stuff, right? He wants his people back. And then at the same time, the king of Salem, who we haven't seen the king of Salem up to this point, the king of Salem wasn't part of the five kings. He wasn't part of the four kings. He comes out of nowhere. This is the only place in the Bible that we have a record of him. We talk about him in the book of Hebrews. In chapters 5, 6, and 7 of the book of Hebrews, you can read about Melchizedek. And the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews says, the Melchizedek had no beginning or end. He was a king, he was a priest of God Most High, a high priest of his own order, basically out of nowhere, God just appoints him as priest, and Jesus is a priest in the vein of Melchizedek, in the line of Melchizedek, it says. All right, so Melchizedek, king of Salem, which could be a place, could also mean king of peace, because Salem means peace, brought out bread and wine. He was priest of God Most High, and he blessed Abram, saying, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand." Abram comes out, is blessed by him, and what does Abram do? He takes a tenth of everything. That's a lot. All the plunder, everything. Abram could have kept it all for himself. Nobody, I mean, he could have split it with the guys that went with him, but none of the other kings had any right to demand anything. And Abram gives a tenth of everything to this king of Salem. Then the king of Sodom says to Abraham, "Give me the people and keep the goods for yourself. You know, you deserved it." And Abraham says, "No, I'm giving you everything that's yours. With the exception of my buddies that came with me, they're going to get their deal, but I don't want anybody saying that they made me rich." Why is he doing this? Because he only wants God to get the credit. In everything, Abram is making sure that God is the one getting the credit. So, there's a couple things here that I see, and a couple ways they apply to us. First of all, I see that Abram is blessed so abundantly by God that he's equal to kings. He doesn't go around calling himself a king. He doesn't go around acting like he's a big shot. He just is. Second, Abram's in charge. Nobody tells him what to do. He goes out and leads. As soon as he hears Lot has been taken rescue, he doesn't have to beg anybody else for anything. He goes out and does what needs to be done. The Lord is behind him. In fact, these kings are dependent on him. He delivers them out of bondage. Third, we see that Abram depends solely on the Lord to provide for him. He doesn't scheme. He doesn't come up with ways that he's going to get this or that and the other. This is a very interesting thing to me, that when he had a chance to divide up the land with Lot, he lets Lot pick. He's not worried about it. You know, usually in that situation, you would find them going back and forth and, okay, I'll take this piece, you take that piece. Abraham says, "No, you know what? Whatever your eyes find that's appealing to you, take it, because I'll take the rest. I have no problem. God is going to provide." And he doesn't take any of the plunder. He deserved it, but he doesn't take it. And finally, I notice that he only gives credit to God. He doesn't want anybody else taking credit. He doesn't want anybody else to be able to say that they made him who he is. He wants God to get all the credit. Gives a tenth of everything and receives the blessings of God. All right, so how do we apply this to our own lives? I think first of all, and this is something that I shy away from a lot of times because of the way that the health and wealth gospel preachers have abused it, but I absolutely believe that those who follow the Lord in faithfulness will see abundant blessings in their lifetime. Now, in order to see that, they have to actually make decisions based on what the Lord would have them do. They have to, in all things, acknowledge him. But I've seen it over and over, too many times for it not to be a truth, that those who orient their lives around God's plan for their lives see abundance come. And it's not always material things that I'm talking about. They see a joy. They see just an abundance of living in life. Now, second, I see that just as all the nations depended on Abram to deliver them, Abraham is a type. The Bible has types that shadow the real thing to come. Abraham is a type of Jesus in the Old Testament here. He is going to deliver all these nations. Jesus delivers all of mankind. Just as the nations needed Abraham, so we all needed Jesus. And the world needs us. I don't know if you ever stopped to think of what the world would be like if it wasn't for Christianity. Okay? I mean, we get our panties in a wad when the world rejects us, but we never just stop to go, you know what? You really want us to get out of the world? Think about what it would be like. You want to blame all the evils of the world on Christianity? The truth is, there wouldn't be good without what Christ has done through his church. Me and the kids were talking about this yesterday. You know, we wouldn't have basketball. I mean, to me, that, man, without basketball, what would the world be like? But we wouldn't have hospitals. We wouldn't have universities. One of my kids said, well, somebody else would have done it. No, maybe not, because it was a sole focus of the believers, of the early Christians, that mercy would be given. And that's why Christianity, that's why hospitals come out of Christianity. It makes perfect sense. Well, that's a good point, too. By him and for him. So just as we see here, God said all the nations would be blessed through Abraham. We see that happening in this passage, and we see how, for all time, God has blessed all of mankind through his people. Then, third, and then we need to think about that. This world, we're the only deliverance that it has. Jesus Christ working through us, only deliverance this world has from hell and from its own destructive behavior. If we back out of the world, if we pull ourselves away and decide, oh, I can't handle that, you know, this city, I got to move out of this city because of the crime rate, this, if we insulate ourselves, and I think that's what the church did in the last 100 years, I think the church in the United States insulated itself from the world because we were so freaked out by it. We basically let the world start to destroy itself. If you take Christianity out of the world is going to destroy itself. And we can be a portion of the blame. Okay. Third. Oh, by the way, that's why I say we still need to stay in the ballpark and things like that. That's why I get so excited when, you know, we got people in the church that are still coaching back there and everything.
That's what got me coming to church.
Right.
George Wiley, Mr. Russell, that's what it's all for.
And how many kids in the last 10 years have been the same thing? I mean, the real reason they started coming, yeah. Monica wouldn't be here if we hadn't been in the ballpark. That's it. Yep. Third, we've got to get to the place where we stop trying to scheme figure out the angle, come up with the right way to do it. I mean, we're always doing that. I know I'm always doing that. Okay, how do I work this? How do I work that? Abraham didn't do that. And God blessed him beyond what he could even imagine. I mean, we just got to trust that the Lord's got it taken care of. And I know that's not easy to do. And I know that we are required to be actively engaged in our own lives. Okay, so I don't want to make it sound like, no, you're supposed to sit back passively and let God do it all. It's not what I mean. But you know the difference between asking the Lord to lead you and taking the steps that he's showing you and trying to work it on the side. I mean, I think everybody knows that for themselves, and it's different for everybody. But I know what it feels like for me. And it's usually I'm beating my head against the wall, and I finally stop and go, maybe God's not in this. Maybe I need to just stop and not take the next step until I know where he's telling me to go. Stop trying to connive. Stop trying to schmooze. Stop trying to work it out on my own on the side here. Now, for me, that's going to LSU every time we go to an LSU game. I'm reminded of this because I'm trying to wheel and deal, get this person, get that person, and then half the people drop out, and another five people show up, and back and forth. And I finally get to the end of Friday, and I'm a miserable wreck, and I'm making everybody in my house a miserable wreck. And I realized at the end of the football season, Lord, I give up. You're going to have to take care of it. I'm not going to worry about it anymore until the next game. You know. But I found, you know, the Lord, he's taking care of it. I need to let him take care of it and stop trying to do it myself. Okay? That's what I see in Abraham. Where you want to go, Lot? Just choose. I'm good. I don't care. You want to go that way? Fine. Oh, no, you want to go that way? I don't care. Because I know that the Lord is taking care of this. And then finally, we got to make sure that God's getting all the credit. We like to take the credit ourselves. We love it. But Abram made sure that he wasn't getting the credit. He wanted it all to go to the Most High. And even to the point, he wanted to make sure none of the other kings were going to get credit for this either. Okay, no. I would rather deny myself all this wealth, because wealth really isn't that important to me. I'd rather deny myself that than to have you be able to take credit for something that only God did. Take it all back. I mean, can you imagine that? You help somebody out, you help secure for them $1 million, and they go, you know what, you deserve a portion of that. And you just step back and go, you know what? No, I don't. It's all yours. You can have it. Well, but you help me secure it. It doesn't matter. Because I don't want you to think that, you know, you did all this in my life when I've got blessings flowing down. I want to make sure everybody knows it was God. You know, and as a church, we try to do that as well. We've taken a lot of times that we wouldn't cut corners. I can't even remember. I know there was somebody that wanted to donate a lot of money if we did certain things. And I just said, no, I don't think so. I remember years ago, there was somebody coming to the church, and they were over at my house, and they knew, you know, the way I kind of try to stand on stuff like this. And I said, yeah, but you know what? What if I went out and I won the lottery tomorrow? And I wrote a check for the church for $3 million. Kristen said, Mark would tell you not to put it in the offering plate. Oh, come on. I said, no. I mean, why would I take that money? I mean, not me, but why would the church take that money? That's not what we're about. You know, yeah, but $3 million, think what you could do. Sure, and think what God could do to us without it. You know? Let's let him take care of it. He wants us to have money like that. He's going to figure out a way. So we've got to stop scheming and just let God take care of it all. Not to say that I don't pray that he gives us $3 million. But it's going to have to be him. Let's pray. Lord, we love you and give you praise and want you to get all the credit. Lord, I'm reminded about the roof. You raised $48,000, and you are bringing a team.